Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Science Media Centre background briefing on virtual water. Virtual water, which is essentially a measure of the water use required to make various goods and services, is a term we're likely to be increasingly hearing about. The British government has just commissioned research to audit everyday items from a morning cup of tea through to a bag of carrots according to the volume of water used in their production, and eventually products could be labelled with this number. The new research, which is taking place over the next 2 years, will assess items both for how much water they use and for the impact on the country where they are produced. So this could mean, for example, that a product imported from a dry country would be rated worse than one from a place where water was plentiful. So today's briefing is based on an emerging issues paper put together by the Royal Society of New Zealand looking at this whole issue. The paper is available for download from the Science Media Centre resource library. If you need a login, just register on the site, sciencemediacentre.co.nz. So we have two speakers today who will speak for about 7 to 10 minutes each and present slides, and after the presentations we'll open things up for Q&A. So let me introduce our speakers. Dr. Brent Clothier is Group Leader of Systems Modelling at the Crown Research Institute Plant and Food Research. He's a Fellow of the Royal Society of New Zealand, and over a 35-year research career has published over 195 scientific papers on the movement and fate of water, carbon and chemicals in production systems, as well as on environmental policy and natural capital valuation. Alistair Mowat has been Innovation Leader at Zespri for the past 8 years, focused on a range of projects relating to fruit quality, productivity and sustainability. Previously, he was a scientist at Hort Research for 16 years. So I'll hand over now to Brent to start the briefing.
Thank you very much. Look, I've put some slides together and I'd like to talk through them and provide a bit of a background to virtual water, why it is an emerging issue, and I suppose there's sort of two take-home messages that I want to get across that Alistair will follow up with as to why the industry are taking this seriously. First is about a life cycle. Much water there is in products, and secondly, the emerging area around what impacts does that water use have on the local environment where the product is produced. So if I can go to my first slide, that should be coming up now. You'll see it's my organisation's logo. Why are we interested in water? Because if I go to the first slide, you'll see that the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, have predicted for one of their moderate scenarios what the availability of water might look like in 2090. So in 90 years, you will see that water is going to be a scarce and increasingly valuable resource in many, many important areas, such as the Midwest of the USA and California, Central America, Chile, Argentina, South Africa, and our neighbours Australia. Then there is the area called the MENA countries, the Middle East, North Africa. They're going to be very short on water, and those are large numbers, up to 40% reduction. The interesting thing there is that if you look at the so-called BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, the emerging economies of the BRIC nations should be reasonably well endowed with water. The Economist has picked up on this recently, and there's an interesting article there from last year, and it said the world is not facing so much of a food crisis as a water crisis. And I quite like this cartoon that popped up during the financial crisis, you know, people spending beyond their means, banks lending beyond their means, countries loaning beyond their means. Has the whole world gone mad? But on the other side, we're doing exactly the same with our world's natural resources and our natural capital. So when we look at water, there's a lot more water in products than you might think. And here's the table going through into how much embedded water or virtual water there is in a cup of tea through to a hamburger. These are very large numbers. And so here is an example that comes from across the Tasman that the Victorian government has put together about how much water is there in the life cycle of pasta. Starting on the right-hand side, there's about 180 litres of virtual water in the growing process, and I'll talk a bit more about that later because it's a very large number. There is another 12 litres used in the production of the pasta, 6 litres in the distribution, and of course the 2 litres that you cook it in. But there's a large amount of water in the growth phase of that. Why is that? Because when we look at virtual water, it comprises three colours. green water, which I've put on the right-hand side there. It's the rainwater that's stored in the soil and transpired by the crops. If the soil store runs out of water, then we use blue water from our natural resources of our groundwaters, our rivers and our lakes to refill the soil store so that we can maintain that green water use of evaporation by the crop. And there's another colour, and that's the one underneath, that soils leak agrichemicals. They do produce grey water, nutrients, agrichemicals. So we could calculate a volume that we'd have to dilute that water by to bring it back to an acceptable standard. So that's why in the production of the pasta, there's a large amount of water, 180 litres, around the growth phase. People have picked up on this, and so if we go to the next slide, you can see here that the Food Ethics Council of the United Kingdom have recently released a paper, and this was just released in July of this year, and it's a discussion and recommendations for the inclusion of water labels on food. And so the water labelling discussion is lagging behind, as the Royal Society document notes, the carbon footprinting protocol, but it's certainly coming. The Worldwide Fund for Nature has had a look at how much water comes into the United Kingdom. Every person in the United Kingdom consumes about 4,500 litres of water a day, yet they only drink about 2 litres. The rest is actually in the food they eat and the clothes they wear. And so you can have a look and see that going into the United Kingdom, there's a lot of water comes in from Brazil, India and many other countries. Of that water, only 38% of the water consumed by a Briton comes from their own water resources. The Worldwide Fund for Nature went one step further and said, and this is the next part I want to talk about, what is the impact of the water from where this country comes? And so they mapped all those water supplies from the country it came from and plotted it against the water stress index of that country. I'll see if I can highlight here just to help. This is New Zealand here. So you can see that New Zealand exports 500 million cubic metres of water in its products to the United Kingdom every year. The good news is, if you go down to the bottom, we do it with it less than a water stress index of 1%. We're only using about 0.8% of our available water to do that. If we go over here, for example, and look at, say, South Africa, Italy, Spain, over in this corner, in D, you can see they're exporting about the same amount of water to the United Kingdom, roughly about 500 million cubic metres. But they're doing it with a water stress index of around 60 to 80%. So they're using 60 to 80% of the available water resources to send that product to the United Kingdom. So I'll see if I can clear all that, or I'll just move on to the next one, hopefully. And so no wonder organisations like The Economist have said, this is quite interesting, the metrics around water footprints, carbon footprints, because it brings into light the subtle implications of various activities. Sainsbury's has noted that water will be on every agenda in sourcing food. Marks and Spencer have noted for them that water is already a key part of their company's strategic directions, and they will use it in terms of making decisions as to where they source food and where crops will be grown in the future. Where are we with water footprinting protocols in terms of the development of agreed protocols? Well, that's something that's just developing, and I've taken this off the ISO, the International Organization for Standardization. This is work in progress. They are in the process of developing a water footprint protocol. And I'll just conclude as a bit of a lead-in to Alistair's talk of a recent paper that actually Alistair sent to me in the Harvard Business Review about competitive advantage on a warming planet. And the writers there from the World Resource Institute suggested that the first step is quantify your footprint. Then have a look at the footprint to see risks and opportunities, the risks around regulation, litigation, reputation and physical damage. And then look on the other side of the ledger around opportunities for cost savings, price premiums, efficiencies and technologies. Use that footprinting exercise to adapt your business. And finally, do it better than your rivals. So what I will do is I will finish on that last slide, which is just the document that the Royal Society have released, and there's some very interesting stuff in there that they have put together, and hand over to Alistair Mullett.
Thanks for that, Brent. Go ahead, Alistair.
Thank you, Brent. So as Brent's touched on, there's various questions being asked in the marketplace about the impact of food production on the future food and water supplies, and in part, I guess it comes from the globalisation of food sources for food supply to a range of developed countries, and increasingly questions about how that production's been grown. Particularly in a historical context, unsustainable agriculture has led to problems with displacement of people and a reduced resilience to extreme environmental effects like drought. And so there has been an awareness both raised by NGOs and governments, and then that's being picked up by consumers and retailers, as Brent indicated. What's being seen is that virtual water footprint is being developed as a measurement tool for consumers and retailers to better understand their impacts on purchasing food, which is coming from countries with varying degrees of water sustainability. And that's allowing ultimately the consumer to make a more informed decision. I guess the implications for New Zealand horticulture is that in the future our exporters will be asked by importers and retailers about the virtual water footprint associated with our crop, and that's very, very similar to what we had with the carbon footprinting. About 2 to 3 years ago, we started getting feedback from the marketplace about what our footprint was. There was awareness being raised by NGOs and various government agencies in Europe in particular. And so similarly, we anticipate that similar questions will be asked of us. At this point in time, we haven't been directly asked for this information, but as Brent outlined, the various retailers are starting to develop policies on environmental footprints and are looking to include water in that. We've seen recently with Walmart come out with a sort of 5-point environmental footprint plan, which it's working through to develop the metrics. But ultimately, we'll start looking at talking to suppliers about what is their environmental footprint. For us, I guess it's in New Zealand, we tend to work closely with the various government agencies and trade, offshore trade, and picking up on the indicators about what are the environmental footprints which are starting to come through, and we want to develop an early understanding of our virtual water footprint, like some of our other environmental indicators, and that gives us an opportunity, one, to understand what our footprint is, but also allows us to contribute to the development of any international standard that could be introduced in the future, such as the ISO. And if you look at what's happened to the carbon footprinting, New Zealand's played quite a significant role for food products, primary food-based products, and the development of those international footprints. The next steps, we see the next step is developing at least one case study on virtual water footprinting of a New Zealand horticultural crop for the horticultural sector. Then use that information to start determining the risks and opportunities posed by the introduction of an international footprinting standard. Identify the most effective strategies to allow us to minimise any risks identified, and to build on any opportunities which are identified as well. And ultimately, we believe that this knowledge will allow New Zealand horticultural sector to strengthen its environmental competitiveness. Okay, thank you.